You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Dr. Courtney Brown. Courtney is a mathematician and social scientist who teaches in the Department of Political Science at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. He is also the leading scholar on the subject of remote viewing, as it is done using procedures that were developed by the United States military and used for espionage purposes. He is the director and founder of the Farsight Institute, which you can find at www.farsight.org, which is a nonprofit research and educational organization dedicated to the study of non-local consciousness, also known as remote viewing. Finally, he has long been active in performance and theater. He sings regularly in the Atlanta area as a baritone soloist of sacred music, and some of his recordings are commonly heard both in the United States and in Africa. He has acted in lead roles in a number of television series and films in the United States and Africa. Courtney is an active videographer and author, producing a number of DVDs and a science fiction web series dealing with the subjects of remote viewing and extraterrestrial life. So let's welcome this multifaceted, dimensional person to the show now. Hi, Courtney. How are you?
Hi, Lance. I want to thank you very much for inviting me on your special show. So this is a real treat for me.
Oh, I'm absolutely thrilled. You know, I started delving into your videos and all the things that you do, it was like a kid in a candy store.
Yeah, I sometimes feel like I'm a kid in a candy store. I really enjoy doing this stuff. By the way, I should say that I can say that I am, without doubt, the leading scholar in the subject of remote viewing as it is performed using the exact procedures that were developed by the United States military and used for espionage purposes, or procedures that are derivative of those methodologies. And the reason I can say I'm the leading scholar is because I am the only scholar. So there is no ambiguity about that. And what I can't understand is why so many of my other academic colleagues just simply are not interested in this. John Mack, the late John Mack, from Harvard University, he used to study the extraterrestrial phenomenon, and he couldn't understand why his colleagues at Harvard weren't fascinated by it as well. But I do want to say one thing, and this is very important. I do study remote viewing at the Farsight Institute, but I do not do any of that at my university, Emory University. At Emory, I'm an applied mathematician, and I work within a social science department, and I teach everything from statistics to nonlinear differential equation systems. But I do not do anything dealing with remote viewing at Emory. I do everything with remote viewing at the Farsight Institute. That's Farsight, like seeing far. And that's completely independent of any university, institute, or governmental agency entirely. The remote viewing stuff is the most fascinating stuff in the world, and I still can't believe I'm so lucky to be the leading and the only scholar on this. And we're sort of at a very nice time to be doing interviews also, because I have published a book, the only book of its kind, on the subject of remote viewing. It's called Remote Viewing, The Science and Theory of Non-Physical Perception. Now, when I say it's a book, the only book on remote viewing, I mean it's the only book of remote viewing as it is performed using those military or military-derived procedures. So in addition to that, I published just recently, a couple months ago, a science article in a very mainstream leading scientific journal and it's the Journal of Scientific Exploration, JSE, and it's on one of our projects, which is the Multiple Universes Project. And this is the first time, it's a peer-reviewed journal, it's the first time these remote viewers that I work with have been featured in a scientific journal. There are many articles in the extant literature on remote viewing, but they all use, or almost all of them use, essentially untrained college kids. And when they talk about training, they're talking about an hour or so. But the people that I work with these military or military-derived methodologies, have studied these methodologies and have become exact in their application of them for like 10 years or more. And they study with people like Glenn Wheaton, who is out of Special Forces Intelligence, and he runs the Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild. And they study with people like Lynn Buchanan, who comes out of Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA. That's a completely separate remote viewing thing. Both of those people have trained a large body of remote viewers. And I say large, I mean less than 20 total, but nonetheless, they've trained many more than that. But the people I work with, the best viewers on the planet, are less than 20. And they're really skilled at using these procedures, and they work with people like those. And those people like Glenn Wheaton, Lynn Buchanan, and another academic like myself, Bruce Kaufman, are on the board of directors for the Farsight Institute. And so we are really the only science shop on the planet where we do these wide-ranging studies, and we put everything up on the website for people to participate in and watch us and check us. And what we have done is we have mastered the realm of public participation in our scientific experiments, mm-hmm. because we really don't believe in the idea. I really don't believe in the idea of having scientists go into a lab and then come out and say, okay, these are the results I got. Trust me.
And
especially with remote viewing, where you're dealing with a mental procedure where people can perceive distant places across time and space in the past, present, and future, and across basically infinite distances instantly. And so when people are exposed to that, they normally ridicule it and say it's ridiculous. So what we have done is mastered the realm of public participation. And to show you an example of how we do that, and it's so crucial for your listeners to understand that the ways in which we make these controls and allow for the scientific community to blend in with the public so that the public can be assured that there's no cheating going on. We do things like this. With a project that we did that was published in the Journal of Scientific Exploration, we did it for a year, and we did a project where we were testing for the existence of parallel realities. You know the old Star Trek thing, Lance, mm-hmm. where you have a parallel reality and there's a evil Spock and a good Spock and an evil Jim Kirk and a good Jim Kirk?
Yeah.
Well, we did a test for a theory that's been around in physics basically since 1957. It was developed originally by Hugh Everett, a physicist. He was a graduate student at the time. And he wrote his dissertation in 1957, and he was widely mocked, ridiculed at the time, and essentially left physics because of that. And he ended up working for the Pentagon in the nuclear weapons program. But basically, he developed the idea that reality is made up of many parallel realities, zillions, infinite number of parallel realities.
Okay.
So there actually was, for example, and virtually anything that could happen did happen. And that those realities are as real as the one that you and I are experiencing on this radio interview right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, for example, there actually was a reality in which, during the 20th century, none of the major wars occurred. And there was also another reality, just as real as ours, mm-hmm. in which the World War II ended in nuclear destruction. Mm-hmm. So we're sort of in the middle. So all of these parallel realities actually do exist, and they don't disappear when we have our reality, which is what the early scientists who worked in quantum mechanics used to think that only one reality could ultimately exist.
Right.
It was Hugh Everett that said, no, that's not true. The other ones don't disappear. And
they're still running within the same space at a different vibration, if I'm not.
That's exactly right. And we can actually get into that. But the idea is, just because you don't see them doesn't mean that they don't exist. And
we don't see air, but we're breathing.
Yeah. And Hugh Everett used to compare that to the Copernican ideas during Copernicus's time, where he was ridiculed when he said the Earth moves around the sun, and people looked at him and said, that's so stupid. What do you mean by that? I don't feel the Earth moving around the sun. If it was moving around the sun, I'd feel it. It's ridiculous. We're stationary, and the sun is moving around us. Otherwise, I'd feel it. But you see, at that time, they didn't have Newtonian mechanics. The whole Newtonian revolution hadn't occurred yet, so they didn't know that they were part of the system of the Earth moving, and you wouldn't feel anything unless there was relative movement. So their science was not complete at the time. So Hugh Everett basically made the argument that the understanding that parallel realities also exist cannot be dismissed just because you don't see it. It takes an advance of science, and he was one who was raising the theories of how that actually works. Anyway, we did that for a year, a test, and this is how we did it, and this is how you can see how we did these controls. If there are parallel realities, then it's very difficult to remote view or perceive mentally, and the future, because if there's parallel realities, there can be many futures. So which one are you going to get? Now, remote viewing the past is easier, because you know which one you want. It's the time stream that you're in that you either remember or you have found in your history books. So if you have Washington crossing the Delaware in your history books, it's part of the history that you're taught, you're expecting that exact thing to be perceived by the remote viewers. So the idea of remote viewing the future is you don't know what you are going to get in the future. So it's very difficult to pick a future out of a realm that you don't have. Now, before I go on, I should say to some of your listeners who may be new to remote viewing totally, let me just explain what it is. It's a mental procedure where people go into a room with a stack of paper and a pen. They're told nothing at all, nothing, zero, 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 about what they're supposed to perceive. In fact, it doesn't even work if they're told that. All they're told is there is a target, do their stuff. They go into a room, close the door with a stack of paper. An hour later, they come out with 20 detailed pages of exactly what the target is. The target is the thing that they're supposed to be perceiving, but they don't know anything about that. They don't know what that is. They're just using the procedures to do that, and they come out with one hour's session of 20 pages of detailed description about that. The target, which is the thing that they're supposed to be perceiving, can be anything in time and space, past, present, or future. So, now, this is the thing. This is what we did, and this is going to fascinate you. I'm afraid I'm about to twist your head around a little bit. So,
oh, good.
Just hang on with me for a little bit. This is what happens.
Okay.
We did the experiment 11 times, and it succeeded each time. The idea was, if there's multiple realities, we cannot pick a future unless there's somebody in the future cooperating with us who's going to pick the target for us. Meaning, for that person in the future, the target has to have actually happened so that she or he would know exactly what the focus of the perceptions are supposed to be. So this is what we did. We broke it into 3 months. In the first month, say January, the viewers were supposed to do their sessions, meaning they just went into a room, did the procedures, and that was it. They then faxed them or sent them as an email attachment to the central office. No one looked at them. We encrypted them in 256 military-grade encryption and put them up on our website. And tens of thousands of people all over the world downloaded them. Now, they had sessions, remote viewing sessions. They couldn't look at them, but they could hold them so that they could know we didn't cheat. Now, in January, all that was done. And then everything stops. And in February, we say, okay, now the target is going to occur, the target, the thing that they're supposed to perceive is going to occur in February. It can be anything as long as can be documented using a normal internet source, such as YouTube or CNN or New York Times or something like that. And so the target, the thing that they're supposed to be perceiving, happens in February. But it's not chosen until March. In March, the person who's designated as an official tasker, who's not looked at any sessions, knows nothing, he looks at everything that he sees of interest that happened in the month of February and says, I wonder when I'm going to assign these remote viewers. And he picks a target out of the month of February. Now, remind you, the sessions were done in January. The target occurs in February, but it's not chosen until March.
Okay.
Now, doesn't that twist your head around?
A bit.
And then what we do...
I have twisted around many times, so I'm surprised it doesn't fly off.
And then what we do is we take that target and we post it up on the website. And our website, by the way, is www.farsight, like seeing far, .org, O-R-G, because we're a nonprofit. So we take that target, put it up on our website, plus we put up the password to decrypt the sessions that were put up 2 months earlier. And we did this 11 times in a row. It was a rolling process where everybody would be doing a session for a target that would be the next month and chosen the month after that. And we did it 11 times in a row. And we accurately described each and every target. Now, these were military-grade remote viewers. I'm the chief investigating officer. I'm the scientist in the group. But these remote viewers were the best on the planet. And they accurately described the targets each and every time. And this is the first time we were ever able to resolve the issue of describing future events accurately. And so that we considered to be proof of, it was a proof of the existence of, or at least strong evidence of, the existence of multiple realities. Because when you have somebody in the future that picks a target for you, you're selecting one time stream out of an infinity of time streams. And if the accuracy goes up when you do that, that's the prediction that you're making when you have multiple realities to deal with. Anyway, so it was a really great success. And the article came out, first of its kind, a couple months back at the Journal of Scientific, about 3 months ago in the Journal of Scientific Exploration. And if you don't mind me saying so, some of your viewers, or listeners actually, may be interested in seeing and reading the article. It's first of its kind for this type of research. And so if they go to the website, www.farsight.org, you'll see a banner about one-third down the page saying, actually it's right under a picture of a person's face where it's called, it's a DVD, I'll mention that a little bit, but it's called, the banner says, latest peer-reviewed published research, remote viewing the future. If you click on that, you'll see a PDF, a free PDF of the article, and you can actually look at it. And we also have all of the data up on the website, plus descriptions of what went on and the whole thing.
Now, wasn't one of the results of the Farsight experiments that remote viewing what would happen in 2012?
Well, actually, and, that's...
Some of the results included Washington being underwater and some other things.
Okay, that's a really good point. You see, Lance, we are the only science shop anywhere where we do these studies, present them, and put them on the website. And we found that because of these projects that we do, people were... It's so different than anything you get anywhere else that people were a bit overwhelmed when they came to the website, because it was like so much stuff. And so what we did was we decided, okay, it's time to create a single thing where people can sort of sit down and hit the ground running and understand what we do. And so we created a DVD called The Farsight Experiments. And there's a link on it right in the... It's got a picture of a person's face on... And it's called The Farsight Experiments. The DVD is a link right on the top of our website. And if you click on that, it's sold through Amazon. And that Farsight Experiments has it's a spectacular introduction to all of the major research that we've been doing up until 2011, which includes the Earth changes post 2012 research that you're talking about right now. Mm-hmm. So for people who really are interested in that, that's the DVD is the place to go, because that explains everything and introduces you to what we are. It's easy to grasp, and it's right there. And basically what we did, that was another project. That's not the Multiple Universes project. That was another project where we were interested in, now Lance, this is going to sound weird.
Well, not to me. Nothing sounds weird to me anymore. But go ahead.
In 2008, I was of the opinion that all this woo-woo stuff of end of the Mayan calendar stuff was sort of ridiculous. And so I decided to say, well, let's see if we can use remote viewing stuff for something real. So I said, let's look at climate change. See, because remote viewing is really better at detecting really big things. Mm-hmm. So I was saying, I wonder though if it could be used to detect something small, like maybe a little bit extra seawater, right? You know, like a little higher levels of seawater, maybe an inch higher of seawater. Would it cause the storms to change a little? Maybe a little change in the mountain, Mount Kilimanjaro, the snow level. I was just wondering if it could do that. So we did a project between that looked at change in a whole bunch of places over the planet. That looked at change between June 1st, 2008 and June 1st, 2013, and trying to study the sessions that were done under really squeaky clean scientific controls, any changes that would occur. And lo and behold, I was floored because the heck with the small change, there was unbelievable change. I mean, you're talking major planetary Earth changes occurring post-2012. And I said, boy, the only fool that was around laughing at the end of the Mayan calendar thing was me. I was the idiot. And so what we did was we took targets. Remember, targets are the things that the viewers are supposed to focus on, but the viewers don't know those things. They don't know them. They just do the procedures, and they're told later what the targets were actually, what they actually were. So they do the procedures in a condition known as totally blind. Now, the targets turned out to be Vaitupu Tuvalu. That's a right on sea level island in the South Pacific. Mm. Fort Jesus, most of these were coastal things because we were looking for maybe a little bit extra storms and things like that. Fort Jesus, that's in the city of Mombasa in Kenya, right on the coast, an old Portuguese ruins fort in a big city of Mombasa. The Sydney Opera House with that distinctive architecture in Sydney, Australia. Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania, we were interested if the snows were still the same in the top of that mountain. Mm. The United States Congress building, which you mentioned, in Washington, D.C., because, you know, that's at sea level.
Right,
well,
right.
It's actually about 90 feet above sea level. But, you know, give me a break.
That's right.
Malé International Airport in the Maldives. Also, the KITV building in Honolulu, Hawaii. That's a TV station that one of our great remote viewers, Dick Allgaier, one of the best remote viewers on the planet, he's a celebrity newscaster at KITV. And the Vehicle Assembly Building at Launch Complex 39 in the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, and Key West in Florida.
Okay.
And so those are the types of targets we had, and we were interested in seeing if there any type of change could be discerned from these remote viewing data. We were wondering how sensitive we could actually get the remote viewing data. Well, it turns out to be that we didn't have to be very sensitive at all. You want to hear what we found?
I'd love to.
Well, what we found was, now this is post-2012 type stuff.
Right.
Impacts of what appear to be, and remember, it goes up to June 1st, 2013, so we have to wait. This is an experiment. We have to wait until June 1st, 2013. So we're talking 11 months from now to see how accurate the data are. But it was an overwhelming result. anyway, we have impacts from what appear to be large meteors leading to tsunamis and possible volcanism.
Wow.
We found extensive and forceful flooding of coastal areas, extensive solar radiation, storms, and other severe weather. Now, in terms of physical, the changes. So we were looking for a little bit of extra, maybe storms or inch of sea level rising.
Right.
I wasn't expecting that. Anyway, and then we also got, in terms of impacts on humans, we got massive self-organized relocation from coastal areas, essentially refugees.
That's something Cliff High talks a lot about, too.
Yeah, yeah, and it was self-organized. It wasn't the government organizing it.
And then we found
the breakdown of rescue or other notable governmental functioning. So there was no National Guard or helicopters.
Well, good riddance to bad rubbish.
And then we found also the breakdown of the food supply system. People were foraging. And the breakdown of the vehicular transport system, people were walking on foot. And then extensive loss of buildings near the coasts. Washington, D.C. just didn't look the same.
Well,
we found all of that results. And so what we're doing now is, this is so important, Lance, for me to say, I am not making a deterministic prediction. I'm not saying this is what's going to happen, run for the hills. I'm not doing that at all. I'm just saying these are the data we got in this experiment.
Right.
It's really interesting. I'm presenting it for what it is. And now it's actually, from a scientific perspective, a really, really interesting experiment, because we got a clear binary result. Meaning, we had tons of sessions for 2008 and tons of sessions for 2013, all done completely randomized. The viewers knew nothing about the places. They knew nothing about whether they were doing a session for 2008 or a session for 2013. Nobody could possibly have known, because it was done using a randomization procedure involving the Dow Jones number after all the sessions were done. So nobody on the planet Earth could have possibly known, including me, which targets were being used for which sessions when the sessions were being done. Everything was uploaded to our website, encrypted before the targets were assigned to the sessions. Literally tens of thousands of people downloaded them all over the world. There was no possible way of cheating. And then we waited until after June 1st, 2008 to let these sessions being associated to this random process. Excuse me. And what we had was a result in which essentially there were no reports of disaster. There were essentially no reports of disaster, or almost no reports of disaster for the 2008 sessions. It was just the 2008 sessions essentially had everything normal. Tourists were still going to the beaches. Washington, D.C. was still normal. Everything was normal. But for the 2013 sessions, there was an enormous quantity of disaster content. And I'm not talking about, like strong winds sort of beating up the shingles on somebody's roof. I'm talking total wipeout type disasters.
And the two groups were consistent between them, weren't they? The only difference being that one of the groups had informed other scientists and they were communicating about it, and the other group was...
Actually, what you did now is you're going a little bit deeper into the structure of the experiment, and I'll explain that now. What we basically did was we had all the viewers did targets for 2008, but for 2013, because we have a system, we were realizing at that point that we had multiple realities. We decided to check to see if we could tell the difference between multiple realities in the future if you specified the conditions under which those realities occur. So, for example, we'd say, how about we look at 2013 for a condition in which ABC occurs? And then let's look at a condition for 2013 in which XYZ occurs. Mm-hmm. Now, neither one of those will be ours, but we might be closer to one than the other, and it would be interesting to see if there was a difference between the two. Now, the conditions that we had were simple. We said, for the first timeline, we're going to have a situation in which the mainstream scientific community continues to ignore or deny the reality of the remote viewing phenomenon and the existence of any life outside of Earth, any extraterrestrial life, even microbial. So, and the other timeline was where the scientific community did make, before 2013, did make some acknowledgement of the reality of the remote viewing phenomenon and the existence of any type of life not originating from Earth, any type of extraterrestrial life, including microbial. And the idea would be that if they did report that remote viewing is a real phenomenon and any issue dealing with extraterrestrial life, it would cause such a rapid change in thinking on the planet that maybe we would behave differently towards ourselves, our fellow humans, and the way we treat our planet.
Oh, absolutely.
And so we might be able to tell the difference in the sessions if humans were acting differently to their environment. So that was the idea behind it. And so we looked at the two timelines, and interestingly, we found disaster content in the sessions for 2013 for both timelines. However, it was a little better, a little less disastrous for the timeline in which the scientific community did acknowledge the reality of remote viewing and the existence of non-Earth-based life or extraterrestrial life of some type. And you know, the interesting thing is, from this perspective, is it really was a, or is, a binary result, meaning no disaster content in 2008 and huge disaster content across, you know, way over half of the sessions for 2013. So we get a real binary result. And we know what the 2008 targets were like. They were normal. And the sessions reflected that. They were normal. Tourists going to the beach, everything being normal. Key West, still Key West. Vaitupu Tuvalu, still Vaitupu Tuvalu. Sydney Opera House, still having operas. I get the idea.
Yeah,
and 2013... all that stuff stopped. Just huge, horrific stuff. For example, in the 2013, we have, for the timeline in which the scientific community is, for the timeline in which the scientific community continues to ignore or deny the reality of remote viewing and any form of extraterrestrial life, I'll use an example with Daz Smith's session. He's one of the remote viewers who did use CRV, controlled remote viewing. He works with Lynn Buchanan. He found the Sydney Opera House, had wonderful pictures of it, but it was all beaten up and there were no people around. And he observed, where did the people go? There are no people here. Now, mind you, it's really great, and he actually identifies it as Sydney, as the Opera House. Now, when he did the 2008 session, and there was no way for him to know, or anybody on the planet, including me, to know when he would be doing the 2008 session and when he would be doing a 2013 session. Well, when he did the 2008 session, he found the Opera House, actually saw it clearly enough that he could identify what it was. And he identified it as Sydney. He described the bay, the water. He showed the building. He drew the unique topographical features of the Opera House because it has such an interesting architectural shape. He drew it. And then in 2013, with the scientific community continued to deny the reality of remote viewing and extraterrestrial life, he found the same opera house, but it was all beaten up and no people around, and observed that there were no people around. In the 2013 session, where the scientific community did acknowledge the reality of the remote viewing phenomenon and some form of extraterrestrial life, then he also found the opera house all beaten up, but you know what he found? He found people. Not in Sydney, but he found them streaming out on foot, getting away from the coast as quick as possible, in one direction. And so, and basically, if you look at those two sessions for 2013, what looks like it's happened is that there was some type of an impact in the water causing a huge wave that hit Sydney. So you're talking some type of tsunami, but it looked bigger than anything we would normally consider a tsunami. It looked bigger than the type of thing that hit Fukushima. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the type of thing we were seeing. I mean, really big things like that. And the thing that was so interesting is that the 2008 sessions showed those targets in their normal state, and we knew the reality for 2008 was they were normal. And the 2013 sessions were so clearly different. So it was a real clear binary result where all the disaster contents piled up in 2013 and none of it in 2008. So just that alone was so interesting. Now that I've mentioned this, I don't often remember to say this. And I do remember now, and I'd really like to say it on your show. And that is that with regard to these timelines, if we actually get to a point where these huge Earth changes actually happen, which is going to be, you know, the June 1st, 2013 is only 11 months away, entire world will know that remote viewing is a real phenomenon. And then they will look at everything else we've done with regard to things like extraterrestrial life. And they'll say, oh my gosh, we have been lied to, not just by the government, because everyone sort of knows the government lies.
All right.
But we were lied to also by the scientific community. Mm-hmm. Because many big players in the scientific community would have known about all the stuff that we were writing about. And including our other projects, which we haven't even had a chance to go into yet. And then the people all over the planet would say, you know, not only do we not trust the governments, but now we can't even trust scientists, that they were lying to us as well. And what I really am concerned about is it could usher in, rather than it just being a victory for people who study remote viewing, usher in a dark age. Because if we're correct with these data, people will then say, I don't trust science. And that would open the public up to people who are opportunists, people who are coming, sort of, imagine the old days where you had snake oil charmers. Or what are those people that used to show up in the old Wild West and come up with crazy potions? You're lucky if it doesn't kill you, but they tell you.
Oh, yes, exactly. Well, you know, I think I know where you're going with that, but if there is some kind of event like that that occurs, isn't it just as likely to be a positive possibility that the people who are there are throwing off the shackles of the control and the snake oil charmers and the fake scientists that are paid by the government and private industry to, you know, basically pawn off a bunch of lies, and the people at NASA and the rest of the place, you know, that we've been kind of boondoggled? Isn't it a time that we learned that finally, once and for all, and rely on our own inner resources?
Well,
and then what would be left if there is such a disaster?
Well, that would be ideal, Lance, if people sort of did rely on sort of their own internal stuff. But what I fear would happen is that it wouldn't be so well organized, and it would be a chaotic situation. And
right.
Now, of course, governmental leaders would have a difficult time, but scientists would also have a difficult time. They'd come out and say, oh, but everything's under control, we're doing this. And people would just laugh at them and say, you said there was no remote viewing. You said there was no UFOs. You said there was no extraterrestrial life. You said all of that. It was all lies. It was all lies. It was all lies. And they wouldn't believe anything. And so they would look to other people. Now, imagine all those other people that would come out from the woodwork to lead the masses.
Well, hasn't that been going on throughout the history and throughout the ages? I mean, maybe this is the time when a new outcome is possible. We're poised on the verge of chaos and stress. And one of my guests, PMH Atwater, mentions that that is the moment when a near-death experience occurs, when you literally shift, when the person leaves their body and shifts into that other world. And it sounds like some of these other worlds that you're talking about and that these talented people are looking into could be the other worlds that exist that are the true reality and not this holographic projection that we call planet Earth with these wacky, crazy humans that are doing horrible things to each other.
Well, actually, Lance, my view is that all of those realities are equal to our own.
Well, of course.
And so we can't really say that we're in the wacky, crazy one.
Well, right. There's probably wackier and crazier ones than this one.
Yeah, there'd be wacky and crazy in all of them.
Right.
But what I really would like to emphasize, and this is just something I very rarely have a chance to emphasize, is that the scientific community really would benefit not only the planet, but themselves to a very great deal, to a very great extent, if they didn't continue to deny or ignore the reality of the remote viewing phenomenon forever. Because the game is if any of these Earth changes actually happen, the game is over. Everyone will know.
Yes.
And it's only 11 months away before we know. And if they don't happen, then the only thing that people could say is, well, Courtney's experiment didn't work. But if they do happen,
then those
house of cards collapses.
Yes, exactly.
And so it's going to happen anyway.
Right.
So the question is, where will mainstream science be after it happens? And I would rather, I am a scientist. I am a university professor. I'm a mathematician. I love science.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I live for science. And if you look at all the squeaky clean scientific controls that we devise up, people look at my experiments and they say, they look at them and say, wow, those are so complicated. Now I understand why people get paid as scientists. These controls are so involved and so intricate, but they're so perfect. They really, and so when you do this type of stuff, I, as a scientist, want to get people to love science, to be able to do these really exciting projects. And you know, if they turn away from science, then even my job later will be harder. I will have a harder time making my voice heard over the raucous chants of the opportunists that would come out afterwards in a chaotic situation. So, anyway, it really would help me as well as mainstream science if they didn't follow timeline A, which is to ignore or deny everything.
That's right. And they come out of the dark ages that have been foisted upon them by grants and power and money and the rest of it and start actually looking at this from a scientific viewpoint with an open mind and examining all these possibilities and joining together in unison or in unity so that, a more positive outcome can be framed and can be created by all of us because we're all in this together.
And
it's
remember,
like a big boat, a big old leaky boat, and you and I are in it, the scientists are in it, everybody's in it, including the people that pull the strings. So you know, we all have something invested in the outcome of this, Earth lands.
And again, remember, the important thing is the time, there is a deadline to this, meaning the game is over in 11 months. So,
well, if some of those projections are right, you'll know that's right. But if some of them come true, then I believe in December 2012, some of those would have already come true. So it's hard to say.
These things we're expecting to be fairly close to June 1st.
Okay. All right.
2013. Okay. That's because the targets, they were supposed to look at the targets on that day, June 1st, 2013. And
okay,
so sometimes what the viewers do is what's typical for them is that they go into the target and describe it literally on that day. What if they find something that they don't understand, such as a city that's been really heavily damaged?
Yeah.
Then what they do is they widen their lens. Across time and say, what caused this?
Oh.
And that's where they pick up the impacts and so on. So
how interesting.
We're expecting this to be really focused on stuff that happens after December 2012.
Right,
so it'll be
really,
as you get closer to June 1st. Now, none of the stuff that we have described in these sessions should be it would normally be stuff that would happen before June 1st, not after June 1st.
Right, right.
But Lance, we're only talking 11 months away. By the way, I should also say, if the results are correct, and if the government does know, and if some mainstream leaders in the scientific community do know, they would be doing some odd things. And so one of the things that we can sort of do is just sort of say, well, if they do know, what are some of the things that are they doing? Are they doing any anomalous behaviors that would sort of indicate that? And so I can, in the few minutes that we have left, I can just list a couple that were really odd.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For example, they completely shut down the U.S. manned spaceflight program.
Oh.
And they stopped the shuttle in 2011. And they don't have any replacement shuttle.
Uh-huh.
And they presented it as if they simply forgot to make a replacement shuttle, as if all those PhDs that work at NASA suddenly woke up one morning and saying, oh my gosh, we forgot to have a shuttle. Oh my, what are we going to do now? So, and now these
is that
are people
like the
that
lone gunman theory?
Yeah, now these are people that have to pay their mortgages just like everybody else. And it's not credible to me to think that they just simply forgot. So there was a planned shutdown of the U.S. space program, of the U.S. manned space program.
Okay.
And that, considering the investment that we have made in the U.S. manned space program, the complete shutting down of it is weird. It's anomalous.
It is anomalous.
Okay, now the next one. I'm looking at the clock, so I want to make sure I get these in before time is up. We have the sealing of the Svalbard Global Seed Vault in 2011. Mm-hmm. So really what we're doing is every agricultural seed on the planet Earth has been stored in that vault that's in the Svalbard Islands part of Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nuclear bomb proof, tsunami proof and everything. And it's odd that it would be sealed right now. I mean, why not? Why the rush? Why not make it sealed 5 years from now? Why the rush to seal it up? And then if it's a Norwegian sort of wacky project, why did the head of the United Nations and his team formally inspect the facility? That's just, the whole thing is just sort of odd. Okay.
Yeah, a bit.
And now, the U.S. global debt, where the U.S. and the global debt, the countries are acting as if they're expecting not to have to pay back their debts. There's no way the U.S. can pay back our debts.
That's right.
So, for example, it's as if they're acting as if there's going to be a global economic reset due to reasons that are not currently stated.
That's right.
Another thing that's odd is the dollar. There seems to be no real defense towards the dollar. And U.S. Treasury bonds are being devalued. And Moody's, Standard & Poor, and Fitch are announcing that they're devaluing the U.S. Treasury bonds, and even the International Monetary Fund is is planning on phasing out the dependency on the U.S. dollar. So they're acting as if the dollar will be replaced as a global currency.
Uh-huh.
And then another odd thing is that there's digging everywhere. Now, in the United States, there's huge, huge digging in facilities. Actually, most of it's finished now. In underneath military bases that are in the inhospitable West.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's far away from cities where the people can get to. And we're talking enough to facilities to house the entire U.S. military plus. And in China, they're doing the same thing, but the Chinese and Russians think collectively all the time. They think that they win if they have their people survive. So they're building subway systems, up to 200 miles of subway systems a year under their major cities, all of their major cities. Now, the point is that these subways are in a crash program that ends this year. That's been going on for a number of years. Why does it have to end this year, and why the crash program? These subways are very deep. Sometimes they go to basically nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But they'd be perfect for housing millions upon millions of people.
Oh, yeah.
Underneath the ground, yeah.
I follow
now,
you.
Also, Russia did the same thing with its subways. It built the subways much deeper than normal so that they can be used as shelters. They also announced in 2011 that they were adding 5,000 new nuclear bomb shelters in Moscow. That will allow them to protect the entire city of Moscow. Now, the program is being rushed to be finished in 2012.
Huh.
So, now listen, the U.S., the Chinese, and the Russians have no nuclear enemies. Why the rush? Why did the Chinese have to finish their subway systems by 2012? And why are the Russians rapidly, in a program that must be finished by 2012, put all these nuclear bomb shelters in? It's just like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And then finally, I'll just say that NASA is now predicting, has been predicting for the last number of years, unprecedented solar storms.
Yeah.
For a long period of time, starting after 2012 into 2013. Now, we can't even predict the Earth's weather a week in advance.
Right.
And they're making plans for they're predicting the sun's weather years in advance. And how in the world can they predict unprecedented weather? You base your predictions based on past experiences.
That's right.
Unprecedented means it's never happened before. Where does that come from?
And then
they're also saying that they have there's normal cycles and that we're more computer dependent now and there's 11-year cycles. But that was 11-year cycles happened in 1990 and
That's
2001.
Right.
And we had plenty of computers in those years, especially 2001.
Yeah.
They're not explaining why this is going to be something special. So what's different about the current cycle? It suggests that NASA may be acting as if it has some extra information that's not currently stated. And so if you look at these sort of behaviors, you sort of say, this is odd. And then there's one last thing I want to get in. You cut me off, Lance, if we're getting too close to the hour. But
okay.
One of the other odd things, and I just sort of say this as a wild speculation, is that, you know, the Fukushima plant, especially reactor number 4, the biggest containment of nuclear spent nuclear rods is with respect to reactor number 4. And that building was heavily damaged, and the rods are in a swimming pool that's like 100 feet above sea level. I mean, 100 feet above the ground on stilts, essentially, because the building was destroyed. And all of the machinery that's used to remove the fuel from the pool has been destroyed by the tsunami. And the building that's holding up this pool has been rated a 0 on earthquake terms, and that means a kid could knock it down if you kick it. And the point is that given the fact that if that pool collapses, it would release enough radiation, like 85 times that what happened with Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
It would kill millions, perhaps over a billion people. Mm-hmm. And so the point is, if something like that is possible, shouldn't there be like a major effort by not only the Japanese government but also the U.S. government? Shouldn't they be pulling out all the stops? The thing that's surprising is that nothing's happening. Everyone's just looking at it.
Yes.
So that's anomalous. It wouldn't be anomalous if they were doing something, but they're not doing anything. They're just looking at it. And that, to me, is sort of, I look at that and I say, it's almost as if they're saying that's not the worst that's going to happen. I mean,
right.
I don't know, but it's
right.
it's just an anomalous behavior that I just don't quite get. Anyway, what I really would like is if your listeners, if they wanted to know more about our other projects, again, this is not a prediction of stuff to happen. This is just an experiment, and we could be wrong, but it's just data for what it is, and we'll know in 11 months how accurate these things are. But they were collected under squeaky clean conditions by the absolute best remote viewers on the planet Earth, and there are some anomalous behaviors of other people that do seem to suggest that the data may actually be correct. So we're going to have to wait and see. We don't have long to wait.
Right.
I would like to recommend that people, if they want to know more about the projects we do, including the location of the exact location with a perfect NASA JPL Malin Space Science Systems photograph, a perfect location of an operational base on Mars that has people in it, what they're doing, perfect sessions that describe the whole thing. That is a project we have done. We have also done a project on a planet that did exist between Mars and Jupiter and exploded, confirming the theories of the late astronomer Thomas Van Flandern, former head of his Department of Celestial Mechanics at the Naval Observatory. And all of these projects can be found on the DVD, The Farsight Experiments, which you can find on our homepage, and it links you up to Amazon. But that, if you want to see all the different stuff we're doing, including those really sexy projects, that DVD sort of gets you started. Because if you just go to the website, there's a lot of stuff there, but we heard the message, which was people were getting overwhelmed. We have so much information.
Mm-hmm.
So that DVD is really the way to get the ball rolling, sort of to know where you are and see what we're doing and to say, oh, my gosh.
it's all wonderful stuff. And Courtney, would you just mention the website again where they can find that?
Sure. Remember, we're a nonprofit, so it's www.farsight, F-A-R-S-I-G-H-T, like seeing far, .org, O-R-G, because we're a nonprofit. And you'll see everything there, including the DVD picture and also the link to the article that was recently published. You can read right there.
Well, Courtney, we're just about out of time, and I don't want to have to rush into the next show, but I just want to thank you for being on the show. We were just getting to some really cool and interesting stuff, and, of course, people can follow the thread and pursue that. And you have a fascinating area of research, and I just want to thank you for being on the show. We could easily do several more of these. So,
I'd be very willing to come back should you invite me. And Lance, it was my honor to be here.
Oh, it was mine too. Thank you so much, Courtney. And everybody stay tuned for the next show, okay? Good night, everyone.
Good night.